Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Today's Friday, December 8th. It's 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. And today is part of a celebration that began yesterday. And that celebration is Hanukkah. And the question is, how is it celebrated? Well, it started on December 7th, and Jews celebrated the eight-day festival of Hanukkah, commemorating the rededication of Jerusalem's second temple back in 200 before the Common Era. Well, Hanukkah is sometimes referred to as the Jewish Christmas, but the festival has nothing to do with Jesus' birth. Instead, it commemorates the rededication of the second temple in Jerusalem, which was at around 200 before the Common Era, where the legend goes that the Jews had risen up against their Greek-Syrian oppressors in the Maccabean Revolt. In fact, the word Hanukkah means rededication. So under Greek rule, the Jews were not allowed to practice their religion for two centuries, until they reconquered Jerusalem in 164 before the Common Era. So after cleansing the Second Temple and rebuilding its altar, they found a jar of oil that was enough only to keep the candles of the menorah, an eight-branched candelabrum, burning for a day. However, it burned for 8 days. And that is why Hanukkah is celebrated over 8 days, with a candle being lit each day after dark. Although people commonly use the term menorah, what is lit during Hanukkah is the Hanukkiah. It's a nine-branched candelabrum. The ninth holder is intended for its use as a helper, known in Hebrew as a shamash or shamash, the candle that is used to light the other eight candles after the blessing, which is known as brachot. So the phase of the moon determines the date of the Jewish Festival of Lights. It always begins on the 25th day of the month of Kislev, the ninth month in the Jewish calendar, which is why the date changes in the Gregorian calendar. So in 2022, Hanukkah began on December 18th. So you understand the differences there. Gifts were originally not part of the festivities. However, it became more commercial over the years, so it's customary to give gifts, especially to children. The people enjoy eating dishes deep fried in oil, including round jelly donuts known as sufganiyot, and potato latkes, potato pancakes, which are known as latkes. So that's the story of where all that goes. Now, let's look at what's going on in Europe with regard to Germany's president, who received the Jewish Reconciliation Prize. So President Frank-Walter Steinmeier used his acceptance speech in New York to warn his fellow Germans to be vigilant in the face of rising anti-Semitism. German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier was in New York on Thursday to accept the Leo Beck Medal. The prize is awarded by the Leo Beck Institute each year to individuals who make significant efforts for German-Jewish reconciliation. In his acceptance speech, Steinmeier stressed that, quote, "We mustn't tolerate any anti-Semitism in Germany." Quote, "Only when Jewish people are completely at home and feel completely safe in Germany," end quote, "is the country done with the work of defeating anti-Semitism," the president had said. Well, reconciliation is, quote, "an infinitely precious gift," he said. Steinmeier hailed the miracle of reconciliation and forgiveness after the Second World War, but added that it was, quote, "not a miracle from heaven, but a gift from people," end quote. Continuing, he said, "For me, for us Germans, reconciliation is an infinitely precious gift," he said. but it remains fragile and is tested every day. Steinmeier called on his fellow Germans to remain vigilant. Quote, the evil of anti-Semitism has shown itself to be much more overt again in recent years. Leo Beck was a rabbi and leader of Reform Judaism who was imprisoned in the Theresienstadt concentration camp during World War II, having declined offers to escape Nazi Germany. After the war, he emigrated to London and served as chairman of the World Union for Progressive Judaism. What a history, isn't it? Amazing when you come to think of it. Well, with regard to the Israel-Hamas war, the United Nations Security Council is going to vote on a ceasefire. This is only about 20 or 25 minutes ago. The vote comes after the United Nations Chief Antonio Guterres warned of an impending humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza. Meanwhile, Israel is expected to open the Kerem Shalom border, crossing for aid. And this is the latest. The United Nations Security Council meets on Gaza today under acute pressure and will vote on urging an immediate ceasefire. Israel and the United States indicate that the Kerem Shalom border crossing, where most supplies entered Gaza before October 7, will open soon for aid. Israel is pushing ahead with its offensive in and around Gaza's main cities, more than 2 months after Hamas' terror attacks began. Well, U.S. President Joe Biden stressed, quote, unquote, a critical need to protect civilians, end quote, in a phone call to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And then Israel says that weapons and tunnels are found at the university in Gaza. Israel on Friday, today, said it had found weapons and a tunnel at Al-Azhar, a university in Gaza. It said the tunnel stretched 1 kilometer, that's about 0.6 miles, from the university to a nearby school, and claimed that Hamas uses the university campus to carry out attacks. Israel has repeatedly claimed that Hamas militants are embedded in civilian zones and using civilians as human shields. Hamas denies that. Well, Hamas, which is considered a terror group by the United States, the European Union, Germany, among other nations, maintains a network of tunnels underneath the territory. Also, photos show that Israeli soldiers are restrained, blindfolded and semi-naked Palestinians. Israel officials have provided an explanation for images shared widely online showing Israeli soldiers detaining a group of Palestinian men in the northern Gaza suburbs of Beit Lahia. The images were first broadcast on Israeli television on Thursday and show more than 20 men kneeling with their hands bound behind their backs, blindfolded and stripped down to their underwear while guarded by Israeli soldiers. It was the first time images of such detention had emerged during the current Israel-Hamas war. Quote, we are investigating to see who is linked to Hamas and who is not, end quote, Israeli military spokesperson Daniel Hagari said at a press conference today. Meanwhile, Israeli government spokesperson Eron Levy said that the detained men have been apprehended in what he called Hamas's stronghold. Quote, we are talking about individuals who are apprehended to Jabalia and Shalbaila in Gaza City, Hamas's stronghold and centers of gravity, Levy told a regular briefing in response to a question about the images. Quote, we are talking about military age men who were discovered in areas that civilians were supposed to have evacuated weeks ago. A senior Hamas official who lives in exile, Izzat El-Reshik, condemned the incident on Friday as a heinous crime against innocent civilians. As a member of Hamas, which is recognized as a terror group by several governments, urged human rights groups to intervene. The International Committee of the Red Cross, the ICRC, said it was concerned by the images and said all detainees must be treated with humanity and dignity in accordance with international humanitarian law. About 2 hours ago, Germany said that peace is impossible if Hamas can continue attacks from Gaza. German Foreign Office said that, quote, lasting peace will not be possible as long as Hamas can continue its attack, its attacks from the Gaza Strip. At a regular press conference on Friday, a spokesperson for the Foreign Office said that Hamas, which is considered a terrorist organization by Germany as well as the United States, European Union, and others, is responsible for civilian deaths because it uses them as human shields and therefore poses a threat to Palestinians as well as Israelis. The spokesperson added that, quote, we advocate for further ceasefires, end quote, so that humanitarian aid such as food and fuel can enter Gaza. Quote, there has been great suffering in Israel, but we, of course, also recognize the great suffering of the Palestinians, spokesperson said. About 2 hours ago, the IDF said that strikes that hit journalists in Lebanon occurred in, quote, active combat zone, end quote. Israel's army says that shelling in October, which killed one journalist and wounded several others, occurred in an, quote, active combat zone, end quote. On October 13, two strikes in quick succession hit a group of seven journalists from Reuters, Al Jazeera, and Agence France-Presse in southern Lebanon. Reuters journalist Issam Abdallah was killed instantly. The other six journalists were all wounded, including Agence France-Presse photographer Christina Assi, who later had her leg amputated in the hospital. The Israeli Defense Forces, the IDF, said the incident was now under review. Quote, one incident involved the firing of an anti-tank missile which struck the border fence near the village of Hanita. And following the launch of the anti-tank missile, concerns arose over the potential infiltration of terrorists into Israeli territory, end quote, the army said in a statement. Quote, so, quote, in response, the IDF used artillery and tank fire to prevent the infiltration. The area is an active combat zone where active fire takes place, and being in this area is dangerous. The incident is currently under review, end quote. Well, the announcement of the review comes a day after Reuters and Agence France-Presse published their own investigation, concluding that an Israeli tank was responsible for the strikes that killed the journalist. The Agence France-Presse report also said that the strikes were, quote, deliberate and targeted, end quote. In two separate reports, rights groups Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch said on Thursday that the incident constitutes a possible war crime that must be investigated. The U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken also called for a full investigation. Quote, my understanding is that Israel has initiated such an investigation, and it will be important to see the investigation come to a conclusion and to see the results, he said. Well, the Red Cross tells Deutsche Welle the Gaza fighting tests the limits of humanitarian aid. The fighting in Gaza is preventing aid groups from helping civilians in need, according to Stephen Ryan, a rapid response coordinator with the International Committee of the Red Cross, the ICRC, who is based in the blockaded territory. The situation in Gaza is indescribable, Ryan advised Travella in an interview. He said that not only is the aid entering the territory insufficient, but the fighting has also made it unsafe to distribute what little aid there is. Meanwhile, civilians continue to suffer to, quote, an unacceptable, end quote, degree, he said, with hospitals overwhelmed by patients as well as people using them as places of refuge from the fighting. Quote, under the current conditions, we have reached the limit of humanitarian action in an environment like this, Ryan said. He added, quote, our teams are doing the best that they can right now here in Gaza, but it is not going to be enough. We need much more access and much more safety to do our work. Well, several Palestinians were killed in the West Bank, the ministry says. At least five Palestinians were killed by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank, the Palestinian Health Ministry said on Friday. The ministry said that the Palestinians had been shot at the Al-Fara refugee camp near the town of Tubas. French news agency Agence France-Presse later said that the death toll had been revised to six, citing the health ministry. And the Palestinian news agency Wafa reported that the Palestinians had been killed in clashes, quote-unquote, with Israeli forces who stormed the camp amid intense fire and the blasts of explosions, end quote. Well, the Israeli military spokesperson's office told the Reuters news agency it was checking the report. The Palestinian Authority says at least 263 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank since October 7th, more than the entire death toll for last year, with both Israeli forces and residents of illegal Israeli settlements being responsible for the deaths. Well, Blinken, about 7 or 8 hours ago, criticized Israel over civilian deaths. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has questioned the efforts made by Israel to protect civilians in Gaza in comments that represent the strongest criticism of Israel's operation by a top Biden administration official since the war began. Quote, as we stand here almost a week into this campaign, into the south, it remains imperative that Israel put a premium on civilian protection, end quote, Blinken said during the press conference in Washington. And there does remain a gap between the intent to protect civilians and the actual results that we've seen or are seeing in the ground. More than 17,000 Palestinians have been killed, according to the health ministry in the Hamas-run enclave. Deutsche Welle's correspondent in Jerusalem, Tanya Kramer, said that she had spoken to people in Gaza by phone who had told her that they have no place to go as Israel expands its ground operation to the south. Quote, people are saying there is no call for a full ceasefire. There is no safety and security for them in Gaza, Kramer had said. Well, the United Nations estimates that around 1.9 million people, the vast majority of the population in Gaza, has been displaced by the war. Now we hear about 9 hours ago that Israel indicates it will open the Kerem Shalom crossing. Israel has agreed to open the Kerem Shalom border crossing for the screening and inspection of the humanitarian aid delivered into Gaza via the Rafah crossing from Egypt, a United States official had said. Washington has been discussing the possibility of opening of the Kerem Shalom border for weeks in order to speed up the inspection process of aid trucks. No time frame was given on when the crossings would open. The United Nations aid chief, by the name of Martin Griffiths, had earlier told reporters that, quote, while negotiations had been ongoing, there were promising signs of the reopening. Well, the checkpoint was responsible for 60% of goods getting into the besieged Palestinian territory before the start of the war between Israel and Hamas on October 7th. In Israel, Colonel Elad Gohen, head of the Civil Department at CDGAT, Israeli Agency for Civilian Coordination with the Palestinians,
said that the crossing would be opened to allow checks on A trucks. Quote, we will open Kerem Shalom just for inspection. It will happen in the next few days, Gorin had told reporters. And aid is currently being allowed into Gaza by the Rafah crossing from Egypt, but it was designed for pedestrians, not trucks. It would be the first miracle we've seen for some weeks, but would also be a huge boost to the logistical procedure and logistical base of the humanitarian operation, Griffith said, about the possible opening of Kerem Shalom. So the United Arab Emirates, is asking the United Nations Security Council for a ceasefire vote. So the United Arab Emirates has asked for the United Nations Security Council to vote on a draft resolution that calls for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire in the war between Israel and Palestinian militants Hamas in the Gaza Strip on for today. In order to be adopted, a resolution needs at least 9 votes in favor and no votes by the 5 permanent members, the United States, Russia, China, France, or Britain. However, the United States has said it does not support any further action by the Security Council at this time. The renewed calls for ceasefire were made after United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres made a rare move on Wednesday to invoke Article 99 of the United Nations Charter and formally warned the Security Council of a global threat from the war. Guterres, who has repeatedly called for a humanitarian ceasefire, will brief the Council on Friday ahead of the vote. The United States and Israel oppose the ceasefire, as they say it would only benefit Hamas, which is classified as a terrorist group in the United States and the European Union. Well, about 9 hours ago, the Israel offensive in southern Gaza continued. So Israel continues with its offensive in southern Gaza on Friday as the Palestinian death toll passed 17,000, according to the Hamas-run health ministry. bear with me a moment. Let's move on to other issues. The exiled leader, who is Tibetan, says that China is erasing Tibetan culture. The leader of Tibet's exiled government accuses Chinese authorities of imposing monoculturalism on Tibetans, eradicating ethnic identity and suppressing political activities. His name is Penpa Tseri. He's the head of Tibet's government in exile and has called for greater international support for the Tibetan cause. So Penpa Tseri, the head of an India-based organization known as the Central Tibetan Administration, the CTA, which serves as Tibet's government in exile, has advised that the latest round of, quote, black channel and, quote, negotiations with China, which are focused on a range of issues, including the return of the Dalai Lama to Tibet, have been taking place since the start of 2023. In an interview in Vienna, Tsering said that the talks were still early stage, but stressed that both sides wanted to reestablish formal contact. The statement is significant as formal talks between China's government and the CTA stalled in 2010, and Tsering declined to name the officials involved in the talks. So will the talks lead to a breakthrough? After coming to power in 1949, Chinese Communist Party overthrew the Buddhist theocracy that was running Tibet in 1951. Beijing says Tibet has been a part of China for many centuries, a claim the government uses to support its sovereignty over the territory. But many Tibetans reject China's claims. pointing to periods of history when Tibet enjoyed self-rule. Following a failed uprising against China in 1959, the Dalai Lama, the head of the dominant school of Tibetan Buddhism, fled into exile. He has since been living in Dharamsala, a hillside city in the northern Indian state of Himachal Pradesh. The CTA is also based in the city. Beijing doesn't recognize the CTA and has denounced it and the Dalai Lama for, quote, attempting to separate Tibet from China, end quote. For years, Chinese authorities have also slammed the exiled spiritual leader as a separatist, end quote, and a wolf in monk's robes, quote, end quote. But the Dalai Lama has repeatedly said that he is only seeking genuine autonomy for Tibet, not separation for China, from China. So against this backdrop, Hans, the professor of international relations at King's College in London, said it would be very surprising if anything came out of these talks. Quote, such back-channel discussions in various forms have been going on for quite some time, but so far there has been nothing to show for them, he said. Pan said that Chinese President Xi Jinping, after opening several fronts at the global level, was now trying to take a step back. Quote, there has been a stronger than expected pushback from various global players, and the Chinese economy is weakening, so Xi has an incentive to loosen up, he said. However, he added, quote, it is highly unlikely that Tibet would be an area where Xi would do it. Raising awareness about human rights in Tibet. Well, many Tibetans fear that their Buddhist culture is at risk of erosion by Chinese political and economic domination. Sailing recently visited the United States, Canada, Latin America, and Europe to raise awareness about the human rights situation in Tibet. He painted a grim picture of life there, accusing Chinese authorities of imposing multiculturalism on Tibetans, eradicating ethnic identities, and suppressing political activities. He also denounced Beijing for creating a constant state of fear through extensive surveillance, anti-espionage laws, and the widespread collection of sensitive data, among other measures. Furthermore, China is accused of running colonial-style boarding schools in Tibet, where children are separated from their families, from their culture, from their language, and from their religion. Well, the United States even said in August it was imposing visa sanctions on Chinese officials for pursuing the, quote, forced assimilation and court of children in Tibet, where United Nations experts say 1 million children have been separated from their families. Tsering said that the Chinese government wanted to avoid ethnic conflict by assimilating young Tibetans. Quote, I think they are looking for a way to manage the situation in Tibet without losing face, Tsering had said. Quote, they know that the status quo is unsustainable. Who will have say over the next Dalai Lama? Well, Tsering also spoke about the question of the Dalai Lama's succession. He said that the CTA was, quote, not concerned about the Chinese government's attempts to control the process of selecting a successor. Dalai Lama, now 88, has already said he could break Buddhist tradition and pick his own reincarnation or declare the institution over, fearing that officially atheist Beijing would identify and groom a client successor. Tsering said that China's government, quote, does not believe in life after death, end quote, and officials, quote, do not understand, end quote, the Tibetan Buddhist concept of reincarnation. How can an atheist government which does not believe in religion be responsible for finding the reincarnation of the Dalai Lama, he said. Tsering also called for greater international support for the Tibetan cause. noting that the United States is the only country that has a law on Tibet. The Tibetan Policy and Support Act passed by the U.S. Congress in 2020. The legislation makes it official policy that the succession of Tibetan Buddhist leaders, including the succession of the Dalai Lama, be left solely to Tibetan Buddhists to decide without interference from China's government. Well, stating that the European Union is structured in many ways, quote, Gering urged the bloc to have a more uniform foreign and trade policy toward China. Gering said he was in regular contact with about 150,000 Tibetans in diaspora communities worldwide. They represent just 2% of the overall Tibetan population. About 6.3 million Tibetans remain in China. He said some Tibetans in exile were growing increasingly frustrated with the lack of progress and dialogue with the Chinese government. And Tsering remains, quote, hopeful, end quote, for the future of the Tibetan cause. Quote, there is an unwavering spirit of Tibetans inside and outside Tibet, Tsering said, and we will never give up on our struggle. It truly is amazing. This has been going on since 1959. This has taken place about 4 hours ago. We read a report that the German Chancellor Olaf Scholz hits a record low in new polling. Germany's ruling Socialist Democrats are in a bad way. Latest polling shows how turned off voters are by the center-left and the man it chose to run the country. Well, it's an awkward time for the Social Democratic Party to celebrate itself. The center-left SPD gathers this weekend for its national party conference in Berlin on the heels of yet another major jolt showing how unloved they are. If general elections were held now, the party of Chancellor Olaf Scholz would only receive 14% of the vote, and that is another 2% lower than the last month's figure and the lowest since June of 2021. According to Deutschlandtrend, a monthly tracking of political sentiment among the German electorate. The Greens, who support the SPD in a coalition, lands slightly ahead at 15%. The government's third party, the Business First Free Freedom Democrats, the FDP, would fall under the 5% threshold required to sit in parliament. That is also true of the Socialist Left Party, which recently fractured into two groups. Well, if parliamentary elections were held this Sunday, questions who people would vote. For Scholz, the only way is down. The representative poll carried out by the research group in Infratest DMOP surveyed 1,364 eligible voters between December 4 through the 6th by phone and email, and of them, to 17% said they are satisfied the SPD-led government. For Scholz himself, that figure is 1/5. It's the lowest approval rating of a German chancellor in the history of the poll, which has been tracking monthly sentiment since 1997. Scholz's defense minister and fellow SPD comrade Boris Pistorius is polling strongest of the major political figures listed. Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock of the Greens enjoys second highest favorability rating at 38%, and opposition leader Friedrich Merz, chairman of the center-right Christian Democratic Union, the CDU, is gaining support and polls in third place. Well, the current legislative period has been one of crisis, the tail end of the COVID-19 pandemic. And Russia's full invasion of Ukraine and the ensuing inflationary spiral and energy insecurities. And then last month, Germany's Constitutional Court agreed with the opposition CDU-CSU that the government's budget plans were illegal. It wanted to reallocate more than 60 billion euros, that's $64.7 billion in unused credit earmarked for the pandemic for climate action. The ruling has blown a huge hole in public finances, sparking a budget crisis with no clear solution. Broadly speaking, the government can either cut spending, raise taxes, or declare a public emergency that would allow raising debt beyond constitutional limits. Well, unfortunately, there's no real clear way out. Polling suggests that voters are as unsure as their elected officials on the least bad way forward. The largest number of them, 47%, are for cuts, while 35% are for more borrowing. Very few want to pay more in taxes. It cuts down to two-thirds of voters appear comfortable with sacrificing low-income benefits in a scheme known as citizens' money. And more than half would claw back savings and military aid to Ukraine. There's also plurality of respondents, 41%, who would cut support for making the economy more climate friendly. And the drop in support for climate action comes against the black backdrop of the COP28 gathering in Dubai. A solid majority, 62%, expressed the view that Germany has done plenty to combat climate change and that other countries need to step up. Still, 7 in 10 German voters think that lifestyle changes are essential to stopping climate change, a high number, but off its peak when the same question was asked in 2019. Unbelievable. One second. Okay. Here is the moment. And look at what's happening here in Spain. Has Spain's olive oil become a luxury item? For Spanish consumers, so-called green gold is a driver of inflation. For producers, it is both an opportunity and a challenge as they have to grow production and sales. The real stress for Spain's olive oil begins in autumn. Olive groves can tolerate long periods of drought from April to September and sudden frosts in November. But if trees lose their fruit between October and February due to strong shaking by the harvesting machine and are pruned directly, then they suffer. Ruben Gomez, who manages production and harvest at Garcia de la Cruz agricultural firm, advised. So far, they have been allowed to rest for a year, but that will change soon, he added. Harvesting is currently underway on this rocky plantation near Toledo, southwest of the Spanish capital of Madrid, and here, unlike in the olive Mecca of Jaén in southern Andalusia, the soil is not a beautiful reddish brown, but rather a boring grain. Gomez's people have been active in the field since the beginning of October. A tractor with a special device grabs each tree and shakes it. At the same time, men hit the branches with long sticks. Depending on the degree of ripeness, green, pink, or black olives rain down on the black neck stretched out under the tree. It is an enormous stress for the tree. The vibration would therefore not last longer than 15 seconds, and the hitting should be done carefully, explains Gomez. The drought and its consequences. As a rule, each tree produces around 40 kilos. It's about 88 pounds of fruit. However, a historic drought in some regions of Spain is leading to very poor harvests in many areas. The olive tree doesn't need too much water, but during flowering in May, it can't stand too much heat. Last summer, that's exactly what happened, sparking a skyrocketing in prices for olive oil in recent months. Garcia de la Cruz, on the other hand, is one of the few producers in Spain who have ensured their trees bear fruit every year thanks to a gentle harvesting technique and the partial irrigation of their plantation. Around a quarter of the plantation is now artificially irrigated with probes measuring exactly when and how much water the tree needs. The Spain sets the olive oil price. Spanish expertise in growing and squeezing olive oil is now in global demand. Spain's olive oil is still considered the best, and the country produces the largest volume. World market prices are decided in the olive Mecca of Jaén, where the entire landscape is covered with olive groves. The producer's price there is currently around 8 euros, that's about $8.63 a liter. In the store, a bottle of olive oil costs about 10 euros, more than double what it was 2 years ago. Despite this price increase, demand on the global market remains high, said Gomez, who sees an enormous opportunity in the current situation. Spain has now not only set up patients of their successful varieties in the United States, but it is also supplying tons of unpackaged olive oil to the main to their main competitor, Italy. Some industry experts think the rising exports, now up to half of Spain's olive oil, goes overseas and has led to higher prices for domestic consumers. Quote, Spain should therefore manage its supply chain itself, Antonio Canavilla, president of the Cooperativa San Sebastian Aceites Umbrión Cooperative advised. He noted that the Italians are selling Spanish oil under their own brands, so many consumers now believe that the Italians, and not the Spanish, are the market leaders in the olive business. But despite this, none of our comrades want to invest in marketing and sales, he added. Olive oil is a new luxury item. Another problem is that Spain's system of agricultural cooperatives is often characterized by outdated business structures. They still control 80% of the market. Despite very few women being involved in the olive oil market, Garcia de la Cruz is a bit of a trailblazer. The company was founded 150 years ago by a woman and is one of the few olive oil producers in Spain that completely controls its supply chain, guaranteeing not only high margins, but also more competitive prices. The firm exports almost all of its production to Japan and the United States, where liter bottles have been sold for years at twice the price as at home. In contrast, over the past 2 years, crop failure and structural problems in Spain's olive market have exacerbated inflation across the Spanish food chain, so olive oil has become a luxury item. According to a study by the Autonomous University of Madrid, food prices in Spain rose by 15.7% last year, and this year the inflation rate remains at roughly the same level. As a result, Spaniards are already changing their buying choices, and the cooperative Canadia predicts that consumption of olive oil nationally will fall by 38% this year alone. Well, there is an outdated sales structure. Economist Rafael Pampillon from the Madrid University of San Pablo, CEU, is convinced that speculation in the domestic market is helping prices higher. But it is also a factor that olive oil in France and Portugal is significantly cheaper than here, we told Deutsche Welle. While the climate may be better in those two countries, a demand in Spain has always been high, as the Spanish see olive oil as a gourmet product, not as a grape, but as a staple food. So to reduce prices pressures, some grocery chains, such as the Galician Froiss or Mesa Dona, have stepped up imports of cheaper olive oil from Portugal, but they can only do this because of already established purchasing channels in Portugal, Pampo Bouillon had said. Supply chains cannot simply be changed overnight. That costs a lot of money, he advised, adding that he does not see food prices in Spain falling anytime soon. Well, the olive tree remains an ideal shrub for Spain, even though the country's landscape is suffering from climate change. So that's the situation there. I think that's about all I can tolerate today. I'm exhausted personally, and so that's as far as we can go. I want to thank everybody for being with us. And enjoy the weekend, and enjoy the holidays, and thank you very, very much for being with us today. Goodbye.